copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Good morning, everybody. It's really a pleasure for me to be here today and talk about a topic which is always a topic of debate amongst Christians, amongst non-Christians. What is everything about? Where do we come from? What does the universe look like? And this is the study of cosmology. And yesterday we talked about where everybody in this room comes from, and actually we found out that there's no real cosmologist amongst us. So whatever I tell, I know there is nobody who actually can really tell me that I'm wrong, because he did not study this. So that's good to know for me. I also see a few faces that are new to me, so probably there is now a cosmology under us. So I need to still be careful with what I say. And the topic that I've chosen is, where is the boundary of cosmology theory, as we know it today, amongst astrophysicists? And where actually does philosophy start, in the sense that where are pre-assumptions coming in that cannot be proven, but that are also part of that theory? And we have this same issue also in biology. There are things that are observed, and there are things that are interpreted in a way that you cannot prove anymore, where you bring in your worldview in the way you see the things, you understand the things. And in textbooks, especially in popular textbooks, this is often simply mixed up. You don't see that difference anymore. So you don't see anymore where does this, the real observation, so the hard facts that you know, where does that end? And where does the theory and the pre-assumptions start? And people actually could have made other choices if they had other things in the back of their mind. So this is what I'm trying to do in this talk. I realize, let's say within 30, 40 minutes of talking, you cannot touch on everything. So I just want to give you a little bit like a flavor of ideas and actually start a discussion on this topic. So what I've chosen to do is first give you a brief overview of this so-called hot Big Bang model, the standard cosmological model. What actually is it? Where it's come from? And then what are the observations behind that? Because the theory did not just come out of nothing. People have seen things. They have observed things and came up with this theory to describe it. But then also, where are the pre-assumptions behind this model? So where actually are things coming in that were not observed but are needed to build this theory? And based on that fact, of course, there are probably reasons why you question it. I call this questioning the standard cosmological model. I do not call it alternatives, and there is a good reason for that, because we have another talk after my talk that will talk about alternatives to the standard cosmological model. So these talks really belong together. And I discussed already with Andy about the content of my talk, about his talk. And what is clear, there is a certain overlap. It can't be avoided between the two talks. But we think it's very good to have this overlap, because this topic is quite complicated. And seeing it from two different perspectives and two different introductions helps you also to understand it better. So don't be surprised that when certain things in Andy's talk come up and say, oh, we have seen that before from Peter, this is exactly what we want to happen, okay? So let's start. The standard cosmological model. So there are a few interesting words already in the title. We're talking about cosmology. Cosmology is a science of, let's say, the universe. In particular, of the large-scale structure. What does that mean? Well, we all know the universe is huge compared to what we normally are used to. In cosmology, people do not talk about planets like the Earth anymore. They do not even talk about stars, because they are very small and tiny and not interesting. They talk about galaxies, and they talk about groups of galaxies, and about how are those galaxies related to each other and how do they move. And they talk about the universe as a whole. And if they talk about galaxies, they talk about the structure of a galaxy, but not about single stars anymore. So that's a very large scale of the universe. And we try to describe that with cosmological models. So a model is a description of that universe. which means that it's a trial to understand it by putting it into a formalism. And that's a mathematical model. We should never mix up mathematical model with reality. But we also should not doubt mathematics. If we doubt it, we doubt the details of that model and not the mathematics as itself. So, therefore, the model of the universe and mathematical description, and there are several models possible, and one is better than the other, and we see a few of those things in these two talks. And this model then tries to explain, or at least understand, this large-scale structure of the universe as it is today. So does it fit to the observations that we make? But also look at it in a timely perspective. What did the universe look in the past? What did it look? Will it look in the future? If you can predict that. So this is the scope of that cosmology model. And the standard cosmological model is the one that is most commonly used by astronomers. It's like a set of theories or a set of assumptions, a set of observation interpretations that most of them agree to. And if they work on a cosmological model, they normally do not work on, let's say, alternatives to the STM, but they work on the details of them of this model to understand it better and to improve it. So this is the background of what we are talking about here. And I first now give a brief description of this STM. I'm not challenging it at the moment. I'm simply describing what this model describes. So what is the content, if you look, talk about STM, what is the content that you read, that you hear? The first thing is, this is a model that has lots to do with general real relativity theory, the theory that was developed first by Einstein and was developed further by others, and that actually relates space, time, and matter into one big theory. This is mainly, or purely, a theory of gravitation. On a large-scale structure in the universe, one assumes that only gravitation is the force that is behind between the matter, and the forces that actually determine space and time and matter is gravity. So it's a gravitational theory. And the interesting thing is that there is a couple of equations that describe the general relativity, and if you solve those equations, you get an expanding universe. So the universe is not static, it's not sitting still, but it's expanding or contracting. So it's moving somehow. Something changes over time. And that's a very general statement of the general relativity theory, that you have moving stuff. The next point is that there is redshift observed. I will tell a little bit more about that later, but redshift means we observe that distant galaxies, the farther they are away, the more the radiation coming from those galaxies is redshifted, so the wavelength of that radiation is changed. And this redshift, in the cosmological model standard, is interpreted as an expansion, which means that actually things are stretched out in all directions. An expansion of the universe. That's the interpretation of that redshift. There is also a very important observation made about the whole universe is filled with radiation. And there is a radiation that is very cold, so you can't see it. It's at a 3 Kelvin degree. And this radiation is everywhere. You see it in all directions. It's very isotropic. And this so-called cosmic microwave background, CMB, is considered to be a remnant of an explosion called the Big Bang. And this remnant of the explosion is supposed to have occurred very long time ago, and we see that random everywhere. So this is also part of the cosmological model. So then what is the outcome of the STM? What can they tell about the universe? Very important statements. One is, the universe, according to this model, has an age of roughly 13.7 million billion years. And the number is sometimes a bit different, but it's always in this order of magnitude. Another interesting thing, if you would define something like how big is the universe, it's very difficult to talk about the size of the universe, but something in the order of magnitude of 90 billion light years. And that's already an interesting thing, because you may say, okay, if the age of the universe is 13.7 billion, and it started in the beginning very small, like a Big Bang, now it actually goes out, 13.7 million billion years later, it would have a size of 13.7 in one direction, 13.7 in the other direction. That's 2 times 13.7, 26, 27. Why is it 90? Does anybody have an idea why this number is not simply double that number, but much higher? Anybody tries?
Inflation.
Exactly. So there is an inflation in the beginning, it's assumed, but also the expansion itself, the fact that it expands all the time, makes that it is larger than just the 8 times 2. Okay? So this is not a contradiction. That's important.
But my question would be, how can we know that if we only are here for 13 billion years, because the light has no time to reach us?
That is right. But this is actually a result of the theory. So if you combine the theory with the observations, you come both to this number and to that number. Okay? So both are a combination of observation and theory. The structure of the universe is supposed to be homogeneous and isotropic. I'll also come back to that later, what it exactly means. The space is curved in 4 dimensions due to the fact that we have matter in it. It's also very difficult for us to perceive this, and that's why these cosmological models are difficult, because if we talk about curvature in 4 dimensions, nobody can really understand what that means, at least not physically. You can calculate it. And this is due to the fact that we have the general relativity theory behind it, which actually tells this. Then what is about the timely development? Because I said the standard cosmological model is also looking at how developed it over time. The idea behind the standard cosmological model is started with a Big Bang, so very small and very hot, and then it explodes. And there was an inflationary phase where it spread it up very fast, and then it spread it up normally, so it started to continue expansion. And at the moment, they observed that the expansion is accelerated, which is very interesting. And that means that somehow there is kind of an energy which acts stronger than gravity, because gravity tries to pull things back. And this energy is then called dark energy for a very simple reason, because nobody has any idea what it is, and you can't see it. You can only see that this expansion is accelerated, so the assumption is there must be something like that. But what it is a different question. Yes, it can be observed from supernovae explosions. And I think, Andy, you have it a bit more detailed in your talk than I remember well. So, yes, it can be observed. It can be. It is an observation that is interpreted like that. You have to be careful, okay? Okay. And then we have one more thing, which is the dynamics of galaxies. Galaxies are grouped in clusters, and they are like they belong together. And also within a galaxy, those nice spiral things, you see the dynamics of those galaxies. Turns out that actually, if they are stable, that's the assumption, if they are stable, then actually there must be more in those galaxies than the matter that we see. And actually a lot more. And this is called dark matter. So this is actually a summary of this standard cosmological theory. And let's now have a look. This is a picture that you can see very often. You find it in the internet everywhere. So somebody really made some work to explain to us in one picture what the universe looks like. And this is the timely development in that direction. We start with a Big Bang here. You see it very nicely. This is the Big Bang. And you see this inflation where suddenly the universe really expands very, very fast. And then it starts to expand normally. And after a certain time, actually, in the beginning, the universe is filled with radiation and with matter all mixed up. So like really a soup of matter and energy. And everything is light. And then after a certain time, they say about 400,000 years after the beginning, this actually splits up. So matter and radiation actually come apart. And from that point on, we can see at a later stage into that time. So that is how far you can look back in time. It's to that point. And that's exactly what they say where this cosmic radiation comes from. And through the expansion of the universe, this radiation cools down to the very low temperature that we have now of only 3 degrees. Then after a certain time, matter starts to build stars. Stars start to get into galaxies. And that's finally the universe that we see at the moment. The expansion continues all the time. And at the moment, it's even accelerating. And that is actually demonstrated by this going further out faster at the end of this picture. So this is the standard cosmological model as it is normally shown. So what is the real observational evidence? So what drives cosmologists to have this notion of our universe? So a very important basic observation is this redshift observation. Okay, so we have this redshift. What does the redshift mean? We observe spectra for galaxies from stars, but it's particularly from galaxies, and we see that they look reddish, to put it in a very simple way. And the farther they are, the more reddish they look like. So there is a correlation, like the further away, the radiation is more red. And this redshift is actually interpreted as an expansion of the universe. So you can say they flee away from us at an even increasing speed, but you can also say that the universe is stretched up. The space is stretched up, and this is actually what the general relativity theory tells you. I don't have a picture with me here, but you remember probably those pictures you may have seen of a balloon. If you boost up a balloon, it's very small in the beginning, and you draw dots on the balloon. In the beginning, they are close, and then you boost up the balloon, and you see that all the points are starting to move away from each other in all directions because of this expansion. And this is the interpretation of that redshift, is the expansion. So that's one very basic, important observation and interpretation behind the standard cosmological model. The second thing is this cosmic background. The question was, how do you know that galaxies are more distant? If you are, let's say, standing on Earth, and you look at houses, let's just say you look at a city, which is quite far away, and you would simply make a picture of that city, and then you start counting the number of houses you see in a certain part of that picture. You say, I count 26 houses there. Now I make another picture of which is much closer, and I see only 2 houses there on the same size. So what I see is I see more houses and they are smaller. And that simply gives me an indication on how far that is away. And this is just one very simple thing. So you can measure how many galaxies do I see in a certain field with my observation, and how big are they. And this gives me an indication how far they are away. And this is only part of the so-called distance ladder. So there's a whole combination of different distance measures that actually have an overlap so that you can match them together. And it starts with very small distances within the solar system, outside of the solar system, to the nearby stars, from the nearby stars to the nearby galaxies, and this all matches together. Okay, and there is, of course, also assumptions behind that. This homogeneous assumption, I come to that later, is one of the assumptions behind it. But if you have that, you can actually very well measure those distances. Okay. So the background radiation is, as I said, is interpreted as a remnant of this big explosion at the beginning, the Big Bang. And this turns out to be extremely homogeneous and isotropic, which means that no matter in which direction you look like in the sky, you find this radiation very precisely at this temperature of 2.7 Kelvin, which is minus 270 degrees Celsius, very cold, but very precise at that temperature. And it took a while before people realized that actually there is kind of a fluctuation in this radiation, but they're very small fluctuations, so like tiny changes. But these changes are now interpreted as being very important to understand the structure of the universe. And you see this here, like the red points are the ones where the temperature is a bit higher, like in the fifth decimal point, there is one more in that order of magnitude, and also lower temperature as the blue here, and average temperature as green. And this is now like okay, we are looking that far back in time, and we see this picture. So this is what the university looked like in terms of its structure that very long time ago. And then there was an assumption that if that is the case, does this picture actually relate to what we see as structure in the universe in terms of where are the galaxies, how do they concentrate? And this is indeed found. So galaxies are not spread uniformly through the universe. They are organized or actually put in string-like structures. So you see that actually they clump together in structures. And these structures have been shown to correspond to these fluctuations in the cosmic background. And that is part of the theory as well, that we say, okay, this background shows how the universe looked that far away or that long ago. And the structure, how the galaxies are structured in the universe, fits exactly to what we see there as a picture. This was considered to be a further proof that its theory is correct. Okay, a few pictures. So the earliest observation of this microwave background were in the, I think, 1920, 1930 around, where this, its radio waves were actually found. And since then, ever it has been improved. So this single picture that you see here, I think it was here, this is called this WMAP. is a probe, so it's a satellite that has been designed to measure this background in very much detail in all directions. And this satellite caused all those nice pictures of the background. Okay, so a picture of one galaxy. It's the nearest by galaxy apart from our own galaxy. Our own galaxy we cannot make a picture of outside because we are sitting in the middle of it. So therefore we need to look at other galaxies to look how they look like. It's the Andromeda galaxy. It has a distance of a few million light years from from us, and we see the very nice spiral structures. But I already said, when astronomers or cosmologists talk about galaxies, they more or less look alike. Where are more galaxies? And here is a very nice picture of Hubble, the so-called deep field picture, which means that Hubble tries to find spots where there are not so much stars from our galaxy that actually are disturbing the picture. And they look through that empty space and then make pictures where you see a lot of different galaxies. And so the whole universe is full of galaxies. There is an estimate that there are roughly 100 billion galaxies in the visible universe. So that's a good number to remember, 10 to the 11 galaxies. And also each of those galaxies on average contains 10 to the 11, so 100 billion stars. Okay, so 100 billion stars in every galaxy and 100 billion galaxies in the visible universe, the ones that we can observe because we see their radiation coming to us. So this already gives also a little bit of the size of the thing that we are talking about here. And if you then start mapping all those galaxies that are measured in structures, so this is now like a round vision from Earth, where we see in the middle our own galaxy, because that's what we see from our galaxy, because we're sitting in the middle of it. And we see how all those galaxies are structured. You see that this is not a homogeneous distribution in itself, because we see those structures. And this structure that we see here is then linked very nicely to this cosmological background. And in order to find this, that those two are very nicely connected, there have been very big simulations made, computer simulations, that say, okay, if we start with this cosmological background picture, and we put like mass points on all those hot points, and say this is where the mass was in the beginning, and then they let this develop with all the theory that they have. This was the illustrious simulation. Then at the end, we find very precisely the structure of the universe with the galaxies that we have today. And that's where this statement comes from, that the two actually are nicely connected to each other. Okay, so far about the theory itself. Let me come to the issues. I have brought a small movie. It takes 5 minutes. I think I can show it. Yeah, I think I could do that. Because some of those issues with the standard cosmological model are very nicely today, very nicely presented in the internet. You can look it up. So if you if my talk is not long enough or you want more details, I have a number of YouTube videos and Wikipedia readings so that you don't have to buy, let's say, expensive books and understand a lot of physics. You can do that today, actually learn very fast from those things. And I brought one on the first two problems. So let me briefly explain what it is about. There is a so-called statement that the universe has very amazing properties that cannot be explained by the standard cosmological model in itself. So they need further assumptions. One is the thing that the universe is flat. And the other thing is the fact that the universe is isotropic. The one is called the flatness problem. The other is the horizon problem. And the video that I'm going to show is actually explaining how cosmologists today try to avoid those problems or try to explain those problems. And there's another one which is not touched in that video, which is that the parameters of physics are highly fine-tuned. I come to that in a second. So let me first look at that video. I hope it's working. I found a very funny series called Physics Girl. This is a a young scientist, and she is actually talking about a lot of different topics in physics, so not only about cosmology, but she does it in a very funny way, and you really learn very fast what all those problems are and how the solution looks like. And in this video, we will also see Alan Gutt, and Alan Gutt is a professor in the UK, and he is actually the one who came up with this inflation theory. So he is also interviewed within this video. I would say let's have a look at it.
Our universe has some peculiar properties, properties that couldn't be explained by a conventional Big Bang theory. For example, it's flat, meaning it's at just the right mass density that it'll neither expand forever nor collapse back on itself. Why should it be flat? And completely opposite sides in the universe that haven't had time to interact are at the same temperature. How can this possibly be? These were two of the biggest questions in cosmology. It wasn't until the 1980s with the theory of cosmic inflation proposed by Alan Guth that we found some answers. Inflation took us back to the beginning of the universe, and with exotic physics like repulsive gravity and false vacuums, answered the why and what of the Big Bang. The first problem introduced by the old Big Bang theory was called the horizon problem.
Which is basically the problem of trying to understand how the universe got to be so uniform. Why does the universe look the same over there as it does when you look that way?
And why was this a problem? Well, think of a cup of tea. If you pour milk into your tea, it'll take some time for the molecules to interact and eventually come to about the same temperature. But it won't happen instantly. The same is true on a larger scale. The fastest any two objects can interact is as soon as light has had time to travel between them. Well, according to conventional Big Bang theory, light hasn't had time to travel from one side of the observable universe to the other. So why should they be at the same temperature?
So inflation gets around that in a really very simple way. That if you trace back the universe that we're looking at now to what it looked like before inflation, it was vastly smaller than anybody would have thought without the inflationary theory.
Vastly smaller is not an exaggeration. Before inflation, everything in our observable universe fit in a volume of billions the size of a proton. Then the universe went through two expansions, inflation and after. Both expanded space by a factor of 10 to the 28, but the second expansion took 13.8 billion years. That first expansion, inflation, took 10 to the minus 38 seconds. It's just an unfathomable rate. Back to you, Goof.
And it was during the time before inflation, when the universe was incredibly tiny, that there was plenty of time for every piece of the universe to communicate with every other piece, and plenty of time for it to come to essentially a uniform density of energy and uniform temperature.
So now we know the universe was super tiny. Well, the true genius of Goof's theory was not the incredibly tiny universe, but how it could have expanded so fast. Inflation provided the mechanism for expansion, repulsive gravity.
In Newton's theory of gravity, gravity was always attractive. Just with no other option. But it turned out that this more complicated theory of general relativity actually allows for the possibility of a repulsive form of gravity.
Yes. In very specific circumstances, gravity can provide a push, not a pull. It comes from something called a false vacuum, a state of matter in the early universe that allows expansion of space while the mass density stays constant. And that understanding for the mechanism of inflation brought a solution to the horizon problem. The second problem was called the flatness problem.
Why is the universe so flat? And what do I mean by flat?
Well, the curvature of the universe is defined by the mass density of space, or the amount of energy and mass per volume. If there is a lot of matter, the universe is closed and collapses back in on itself. If there's not much matter, the universe is open and it will expand forever. If, however, the universe is in perfect balance and the density is exactly critical density, the universe will be flat and it will continue to expand forever, but at an increasingly slower rate. So it will eventually stop, but when time reaches infinity.
The mass density we've measured so far appears to be exactly critical.
Why is that?
In fact, if it had started even slightly open or closed, it would have been pushed even further away from critical density over time by the expansion of the universe. Just like the longer an arrow has to travel toward a target, the straighter you had to have initially shot the arrow. But we're so close to hitting a bullseye. We're so close to critical density.
Why? Inflation forces the universe toward critical density. How?
Well, the conventional Big Bang theory, the universe gets larger. As it gets larger, it gets much, much less dense. During inflation, the universe is getting larger and larger, and hence flatter and flatter at a fixed mass density.
General relativity implies a direct relationship between the mass density and the geometry of space, or the flatness. So as space expands, the geometry gets flatter. Imagine space like the surface of a balloon. As you blow the balloon up, the surface gets flatter and flatter. Space does this in three dimensions. And as space gets flatter, we go back to our relationship between geometry and mass density, and we find that the density is pushed toward critical density. In fact, it's pushed very quickly toward critical density since the expansion of space during inflation is exponential, which explains why we're so close to critical mass density.
And boom! Flatness problem solved.
So you may be wondering, if inflation theory was so revolutionary and imaginative, why haven't we heard more about it? Well, inflation is still a hot topic of debate. As we discussed, it solves many of the problems of conventional Big Bang theory and is widely accepted throughout the scientific community. But like all good theories, it has to make more predictions, which we then observe. We're hoping for more observations that support inflationary theory or whatever theory that might improve upon it. That's what we're working toward. Thanks for watching.
Okay, thank you for viewing this. I mean, the way that it's explained is very concentrated, and we see that there is a solution found by cosmologists, a possible solution, that actually explains this flatness problem and the horizon problem in one theory, which is called inflation. That's why it is so popular. You also saw at the end, there is still a large debate going on inflation. Be careful, this is a theory. This is a theory that was developed to solve that problem. There is not an observation that really explains that it is the case. It's the observations made that actually caused a problem for the standard hot Big Bang that were solved by this pre-assumption. And that's why we are now talking about pre-assumptions or adding theory. So we're now looking at some of the pre-assumptions behind the cosmological model to see actually where actually are people not finding anything, but they simply assume things. And which assumptions go into this model? And the first assumption is the so-called cosmological principle. This is actually the statement that the Earth has no reason for being in a special place. This idea has, of course, a worldview pre-assumption behind it. The worldview is God does not exist, so there is nothing like creation, which means life is purely accidental. So why should we be in a specific position in the universe? If you are not in a specific position, but just randomly chosen somewhere, actually, we can assume that the universe, no matter where you are, looks the same. Okay? So this is the background behind that principle. So the short version is, we are not special, therefore we are not in a special position. And then we can assume the universe is homogeneous. There is, by the way, another principle, which is called the entropic principle, that needs to be taken into account as well. There are a lot of cosmologists that say, well, be careful here, because Even if we do not know, do not believe in God, and we do not believe in creation, we still believe that we are here as we are here, which means that the universe could well look different in a different position, but that is then a position where life cannot exist. So we are probably in a special position simply because life cannot exist in other parts of the universe. Okay, that's the entropic principle. So please keep those two apart. Still, all cosmologists actually normally assume this homogeneity, that no matter where you are in the universe, it will look the same. This is different from the so-called isotropic principle, but that means it's the same if you look in different directions. So when I stand on the Earth and I look in all directions globally, I will roughly see the same thing. Now, we must be careful. This is something you can observe, the isotropy, because you can do that from the Earth. This is something you cannot observe because we cannot go anywhere else to look whether that's true or not. So this remains a pure assumption. This is an assumption that can be proven, and it has been proven, by the way. So the isotropy is really observed, and it is true. The homogeneity remains an assumption. And that's simply because we are fixed in our universe where we are. The Earth is part of the solar system. The solar system is part of the, let's say, nearby group of stars that we really can say they are in our neighborhood. And then that solar system group, which is nearby stars, is roughly on 2/3 away from the center of our galaxy, our Milky Way. By the way, a perfect position to be in. If we would be closer to the center, we would have too many stars around us. Night would not be dark anymore. And also a lot of radiation would be there that would be dangerous for life. If we would be further out, we would see less stars in the sky. Okay, so the night would be really dark without any stars or with only a few stars. So this gives us a perfect view to the outer world. We can look outside of our galaxy. We can look see the other galaxies, for instance. We still see the stars around us, so we have a very beautiful place to be, which I think is not accidental. Some other things it is. Then, our own Milky Way is part of what we call a local galactic group of galaxies that group together in a group. So we are sitting here, and there are other galaxies around us. For instance, this Andromeda galaxy is one of the galaxies in the local group. And these groups, this local group, is again together with other groups, grouped together in the Virgo cluster group of galaxies. So we go to even larger scales all the time. And this local group, this Virgo supercluster group, is then one of many other clusters. So you see this clustering everywhere. And that's what we also see on a previous picture, that there is clustering in the universe. And therefore, only at the very highest scale, this homogeneity can be, let's say, assumed. On all smaller scales, it's definitely not seen. Okay. So we already have seen that inflation is one of the theories that solves this problem of flatness and horizon, if it is true. But it's, at the moment, a pure assumption. There is no physical theory behind it. The only thing that is saying, if this inflation took place, we have two problems solved at once. That's the statement. It's not a statement. This is the theory that explains it. The multiverse theory is another one, which is a little bit aside of the standard cosmological model, but I still want to explain it briefly. You may have heard about multiverse many times. The problem is the following. We have this fine-tuning of the physical parameters. Everything fits together. We have matter, we have light, we have radiation, we have life that can exist. And physicists have found out that this fine-tuning of physics is a very high fine-tuning, in the sense that if one of those parameters will be a little bit different, everything would go wrong. We would either have only radiation in the universe, or it would be completely dark. No matter would exist, all these type of things. So everything would go wrong immediately. And there are estimates that the number of, let's say, pure theoretical combinations of physical parameters that could exist is a very high number. You see here a number of 10 to the 700. So you say, okay, how can it be that our universe has exactly the right one picked out of 10 to the 700? And, well, that's difficult. If I say, well, God knew exactly what he was doing, I'm done. And I think that is the case. But if you do not believe that, what kind of theory do you have? And they say, well, probably we are not the only universe. All those other 10 to the 700 minus 1 universes exist as well, either after each other or in parallel. We can't see them. It's a pure assumption. But if all of those exist, then also the one we are in exists. And life would get into existence in this one, because in all the others it would not work. And there we are, problem solved. Okay? So if you hear about multiverse theory, do not think it's an observational thing and there are many universes. It's simply the naturalist alternative for creation. Okay? So then we have those two things with dark matter and dark energy. And that's a very interesting thing. We've seen that galaxies are dynamically moving. They are grouped in clusters and they turn around or they circle around, they evolve or revolve all the time. And this observation is very interesting, because if you start measuring the rotation speed of galaxies and the speed that they have relative to each other, you see that they are somehow linked together gravitationally. And then you start calculating, okay, how much matter do I need to have enough gravitation energy to keep them together? You suddenly find out, oh, wait a second, there is not enough matter that we find. There is matter missing, and this is then called dark matter. So dark matter is matter we cannot see, that's why it's called dark, but it's also called dark because we have no idea what it is. If you have time, you will get this presentation anyhow somewhere. There is another interesting video from Physics Girl about dark matter, which is also hilarious, funny, and explains very nicely what it is. So again, we have something that we implicitly find, which is not explained by the SCM, and that has a big question mark around it. What is it? What can it be? It's even worse with this accelerated expansion of the universe. This is observed by measuring distances to supernovae, and the theory behind it is a little bit complicated, but one finds that the expansion of the universe seems not to slow down, but it seems to increase. And this is what you would not expect based on gravitational forces, and therefore this force field, a stronger force field than the gravity, somehow must be available if the STM is true. And then they call this dark matter, dark energy, and they found that this is a very large portion of the energy in the universe must be of this kind to actually keep against the gravity and expand the universe at an accelerating rate. There's also a nice video there from the Fraser Cain University Today, a universe today that explains it very well, if you want to look further into that. Now, there is another assumption behind the universe, behind the SCM, about the origin of the universe. I mean, this is the final question of all. Where did everything come from? Now that we have the whole theory, we start with the Big Bang. Where did that come from? What was before the Big Bang? Can you ask that question? Did time exist before that? Did space exist? What happened? So this is what many are struggling with, cosmologists, and they have the feeling if we can answer that question, then we have finally made it. Okay? Now, there are so-called quantum fluctuations of vacuum, your question before, which is one of the ideas. They say, okay, everything is empty, dark, no matter, nothing is there. This is called what we call a vacuum, nothing. And then there's fluctuations in there, and then suddenly there is a big fluctuation, randomly, and wow, there off it goes, the Big Bang. Now, even if that would be possible and true, which I doubt personally, this still assumes that there is kind of, we call it a space-time foam, so something must be there.
But there's no space-time.
And there must be at least physics laws that actually then rule what happens afterwards. So there is still an assumption about something to exist, even if it is no matter and no time and no light. This must exist as well. Because if that does not exist, it cannot come to existence. When I talk about creation by God, I'm also talking about creating the physical laws so that they work nicely the way they do. And this is, by the way, assumed here. So this is not saying you have creation out of nothing, as it's often stated. It's creation out of an existing vacuum with some properties that are needed to make it happen. The other thing where people move away this beginning issue is that they call about this multiverse, and they say, okay, well, our universe will finally end somehow in certain form, whatever it is, and then there is another one coming up, and there is another one coming up after each other, in parallel to each other. So actually they say everything exists for eternity. There is no beginning, there is no end, and we're just in one phase of that. And therefore for us it looks like a beginning. In reality there was no beginning. Well, this is of course moving away the problem, because then you have to explain where all this infinity explosions and so on come from and how. So it's not a real solution. It's just an option that's being discussed. Another one interesting is a quasi-steady state universe. Say the universe also exists for eternity. And it's expanding, yes, that's true. But all the time there is matter being created within that universe. So it expands and gets filled up with matter all the time. And that continues forever. It, of course, also does not solve the problem. For this question, what is the origin of everything? What is the origin of the universe? There is no answer whatsoever. Okay? So this is an unknown one. And therefore, I think there are good reasons to start questioning this STM. Why should one look for alternatives? And by the way, it's not only Christians that look for alternatives. Also, many cosmologists, they know that actually they need something else, something better. Because there is so much assumptions in there and so much actually things that they do not understand, that this seems a theory that is not really complete. So we have seen the origin is unknown. We have the flatness. We have the horizon problem. We have this fine-tuning of physics. We have an accelerating expansion. And we have the dark matter. And all these things are not really part of the theory. They are needed to make the theory work, put into it. So therefore, there are pure scientific reasons for looking at alternatives. And they are all valid. And a lot of cosmologists actually work on this. They are not really very happy with the existing theory, and they say we need to come up with something better. There also can be observational reasons, because some of the, let's say, normal observations that we have from galaxies and so on seem not really to fit exactly to this model. One of the observations that is often recalled by astronomers and creation believers among Christians is this so-called quantized redshift, that actually the redshift is not a very smooth observation, but that many galaxies have redshifted that are actually spiked around certain values of redshift. Now there is a lot of debate around this. I think Andy, you will talk a little bit more about that, so I'll limit it down at the moment. But this is going on for a long time, this debate. And some say that it is true, and some say it is wrong, and it's very difficult for me as a layman, although I am an astrophysicist, to really judge about this. Okay, but it's a thing that needs to be considered as well when we talk about alternatives. And then we have that sometimes galaxies are not where we would expect them. For instance, in the Big Bang theory, we have that the young galaxies, young in the sense that they are not so evolved in their dynamics, we expect that we see them far away, because there we also look far away back in time, so they are young. And the galaxies that are closer to us, we expect to be old, because they already have that big age. But sometimes we find young galaxies and they are too close to what you normally would expect. So there is a question mark there as well. There are further observations. I cannot list them all. So just to give you an idea that not everything fits nicely to this Big Bang theory. And of course, we as Christians, we may have also worldview reasons to doubt this Big Bang. Because all those pre-assumptions behind the theory, do they really need to be true? Or do we have alternatives there? The first, probably the most debated one, if the universe was created, must it really be that old? Can it not be much younger? Because creation is something that we cannot really grab. Things may look old, but are young indeed. And the second thing is, this Big Bang itself, it's just what we call a singularity, a point in space and time and whatever it is that really physics? 10 to the minus 32 size of the whole universe? It's something that also many cosmologists themselves doubt. They say, isn't there a way to circumvent that? It may have been smaller in the beginning, but must it have been that size? And then also about the homogeneity, which is an assumption, that it is isotropic, okay, but if it is not isotropic, what could, not homogeneous, what alternatives do that bring to us? I have one more slide, especially on this age issue, because this is the thing that I always get asked for. Okay, you as a Christian, do you really believe the universe is that old? And I was grown up in a Christian environment where I was told the Earth, the universe, is 6,000 years old. And I believed that when I was young. And when I started studying physics and astronomy, my goal was to finally prove that this is true. Okay? I'm now 58. I still didn't prove that. And therefore, I think it's important to make a few remarks on that. It's clear that we want to do that because we understand that God created things. And if he created things, he can do that any time, in any form. And therefore, we cannot judge about ages anymore because he could have created the world like yesterday and it looks exactly like it is today. He can do that. And I remember I had discussions during my study with other students and they were telling me that exactly that. Yeah, you believe in God. You can assume that God created the earth yesterday, and what's the problem? You can believe that if you want, but I don't believe that, they say. And therefore, also many alternative cosmologies coming from Christians, they look into this issue. They try to somehow use the general relativity and actually reduce the time by looking at how can we expand the universe. And on the Earth, it looks like, from us, it looks very old, but in reality, it was very young. So these type of theories are around there. And we need to consider those. So for instance, the Earth is then very old, but on the Earth, it's young, and so on. And since Andy will talk more about that, I will leave that up to him to talk more about that. But here, I want to give merely a few thoughts that have become important to me. First of all, it's not only this large size of the universe. It's also other observations that indicate very high ages that make it difficult for me to say, okay, maybe it's all young. And one of those is that if you look at the development series of stars, they fit so nicely to what we observe from stars, of their chemical evolution, of their size. There is this so-called Hertzsprung-Russell diagram. And I have brought a picture of that here. It means that a star, if it evolves over its life, it gets burning on the so-called main sequence, which is actually telling what's the temperature, what's the size or the luminosity of the star. And it's burning on that main sequence, and then when it, at the end of its life, it actually explodes and it moves into this diagram. And if you look at globular clusters, and this on the picture on the right is one of those, you have a lot of stars that are assumed to have come into existence roughly at the same time because they are in a globular cluster, so they all belong together. They have similar properties. But some of them, actually, if they are more massive, they evolve faster, which means that on the top right side, they start moving away from that main sequence earlier. And others that have longer lives, they stay longer on that main sequence, and therefore on the lower hand you see that main sequence because those are the stars that live longer. On the upper hand they have moved away. So all these observations fit so nicely to the theory that I can hardly think that's accidental. And we have an expert in the room on this topic, so if you want to know more about it, Anke is looking at old stars and looks exactly at these type of relations in her doctoral thesis. Another point is very important, that is we see a lot of galaxies that actually are somehow, they have met each other. And they are gravitationally breaking up each other. They are colliding. But if galaxies collide, actually a galaxy exists of many different stars. So they move through each other, but the gravitational forces disturbs the whole form of the galaxy. And so we have pictures like this. They are about to collide. And those actually have already started disturbing themselves. Another one on the right hand, there are thousands of those pictures. And there are a lot of model simulations that say, okay, if I start with two galaxies, now let's move them together, how do they actually move? And you find exactly these type of structures coming to existence. So this is exactly the behavior you would expect. Now the time scales that you need for that, they are in the order of several billion years to do that, because galaxies do not move that fast. Well, they do move fast, but they are very big, so they really take a long time to go through a process like that. And therefore, these are also indications of a very long age, unless you start assuming things like, well, God created them exactly in that form, so they look like they were moving through each other, but in reality they didn't, because they were exactly created like that. But that brings me back to the first assumption that I made, is God could have created everything yesterday, and it would look like exactly this. Of course, I can always solve a problem like that, but for me as a scientist, that does not really look convincing. And there is one example that I helped me a lot on explaining this. And I was discussing this with Norbert Pilar. He's a scientist in Germany as well, a Christian scientist. And I say, if I would meet Adam the day after he has been created, not the real Adam, the first man on the world, okay. If I would meet him today, and yesterday he was created, but I do not know, I say, good morning, Adam. How old are you? Adam would say, well, I'm 32 years old. So yeah, I can see that. Yeah? So because that's my interpretation of his personality. And he said, Adam, no, you were wrong. I was created yesterday. Oh, wait, I made a mistake. Because creation actually disturbs our view on what age is. But now I'm going to ask him another question. I said, Adam, when you were a child, what did you do? And he starts telling me stories about what he did as a child. And I said, wait a minute. He never was a child. Where do these memories come from? Did God give him these memories of a child? So he has the idea that he is old, but in reality he is not. I would see that as a contradiction for myself. I would say, no, he can't have memories of his childhood, because that was like God is actually teasing us and telling us something that did not really happen. And that is actually the fact here. We see things that look like they have happened, like a supernova explosion in the Andromeda Nebula. We can observe that. But that is several million years away. So if we assume that this was created only a short term ago, that would mean that this explosion never did really place. We only see, and for us it looks like it took place, but it did not really take place. And I personally have a problem with that. I can't believe that God is like that, teasing us that way. And that is the reason why I actually cannot believe that the universe is young, because of those reasons. But it's my personal opinion. Anybody else can have another opinion. I also do not think that for us as Christians, this is really making a big difference in terms of what we are believing. We are believing that Jesus is the Lord. And that's much more important than the age of the universe. And it does not actually, for me, work as a contradiction. So I'm also looking forward to your talk, Andy, on those, some of those alternatives and on your view on that. So, but this was my perception on this. So, to make it very brief, conclusions, I think we have seen it. The cosmological model explains a few observations very well. That's the reason why it is the standard cosmological model. But many things are not understood and need improvement, or probably a whole new theory. There are many independent observations that indicate that the universe is old. And that means that if we look at alternatives, or not only we, but also cosmologists, if they look at alternatives, they need to explain this, and they need to explain this, and probably some of this as well, because then they are a better theory. It's always so, if you come up with a new theory, it must explain what already was explained before, and a little bit more. Then you have a better theory. And this is a real challenge. I don't have any, so I cannot tell you what the truth is and what needs to be changed from STM to make it happen. So I leave it at that point. Thank you very much for listening.